Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Dr. Savage is off tonight. I will be guest hosting for him. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I just want to thank you once again, my friend, for the incredible honor and opportunity to fill in for you tonight. Michael, I can't thank you enough. I got to tell you, every time I get that call, I am just so happy to be able to fill in for you. I know you're working on other projects. I just want to congratulate you once again on the superb success of Trickle Up Poverty. In fact, we're going to be talking about just how prophetic that book has been again and again later on in this hour when we talk about the START Treaty. To me, it is clearly one of the political books of the year, and I just want to congratulate you once again. For all of you out there, members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com for the latest, most important stories of the day. And, you know, with this whole WikiLeaks phenomenon of the past several weeks, with Julian Assange, that traitor, now being released on bail, having unveiled all of those secret diplomatic cables and having in many ways declared himself an enemy of the United States, putting our diplomats at risk, putting many people in our national security architecture at risk. Now, many people around the world are not sleeping well because they're afraid that having worked with the United States, they are now going to be murdered and killed, maybe even in the dead of night. And yet, if there's one silver lining in this cloud, it is to me, what would these WikiLeaks cables show about the British government's effort to smear and slander and destroy the good name and reputation of Michael Savage? For all of you that haven't been on the planet Earth for the last couple of years, Savage was banned from Britain. The only prominent American in the mainstream media to have ever been banned from that country. It is not only an assault upon his dignity and upon his good name and upon his honor, it is an assault upon freedom of speech and literally putting a target on the back of this man's back. And so I have been looking and combing through these WikiLeaks cables. Was there anything there from Home Secretary, British Home Secretary Jackie Smith? Because then Home Secretary Jackie Smith, under the Gordon Brown government, was the one who spearheaded the effort to ban Michael Savage from Britain. She was the one that put this man's name, now think about that, this man's name, a talk show host, yes, an influential talk show host, a prominent talk show host, but still a talk show host. He never killed anybody, the last time I checked. He never bombed anybody. He never raped anybody. She put him on the same list along with terrorists who have blown up Jewish women and children in cafes and pizzerias. She put him on the same list as with mass murdering thugs, neo-Nazis, and even Russian skinheads who have gone out and killed immigrants in Russia and in Moscow. That's how egregious and outrageous the ban is. So I was combing and combing and combing. And there, in fact, is one cable from Jackie Smith to the State Department. It was created on January 1st in 2009. In fact, forgive me, January 6th. I want to be accurate. It was written January 6th, 2009, sent on January 9, 2009. Nowhere is there, that I can notice, Michael Savage's name mentioned yet, although I suspect eventually we will find something about him, because this was clearly a high-profile, top-level effort by members of the British government to silence, smear, and slander this man. But what is to me remarkable, as I go through this memo, is how candid Jackie Smith is about the growing Muslim threat within Britain. This is what is most remarkable and hypocritical here. While with one side of her mouth, she is condemning Michael Savage, with one side of her mouth, she says he is such a national security threat. His words are so dangerous, causing supposed inter-community tension, that he can't be allowed to enter Britain's shores. No, no, no. It's too dangerous. No, no. You can't have Michael Savage there. No, you can't have him spending money on all those restaurants in London. You can't have that. No, it's too dangerous. No, it's too dangerous for him to go to the botanical gardens. No, no. Who knows? Who knows? His scientific expertise may overwhelm people in England. We can't have that. No, it's too dangerous. But listen what she says about Muslims. This is very important. Throughout this memo, Jackie Smith lays out, blow by blow, how the indigenous Muslim population within Britain is growing at an alarming rate. She points out that in 1951, basically 59 years ago, 60 years ago almost, the population of Britain in terms of its Muslim percentage was only 22,000. Only 22,000 British Muslims existed then. Today, it is nearly 3 million and growing. The memo further points out that there are now over 1,000 mosques proliferating across England. Now, for everybody out there saying, as Michael Savage has been pointing out, well, you know, are these Muslim immigrants that are pouring into Britain, are they productive members of society, many of them? Do they carry their own weight? Do they contribute economically and positively to English society? Not according to Jackie Smith in her own memo. She says that of all the religious groups in England, in Britain, Muslims are the lowest group to be homeowners. Only 52% own a home. In fact, she says nearly a third live off free government housing. More than that, the astonishing development in Britain is nearly one-fifth of all Muslim adult women, 21% of Muslim adult men, that's one in five Muslim male in Britain, is disabled. They're all claiming disability. You do the numbers. 3 million Muslims in Britain. The majority of them are adults. And one in five men, adult men, are somehow disabled. It's incredible. Suddenly, they can't seem to be able to work. She says, she points out in the memo that nearly 40% of people in Muslim households either don't own a job, are students, or are claiming disability. So, as she points out in her own memo, there is a problem of government dependence among Muslims across Britain. In other words, many of them are welfare bums who come from Pakistan, who come from India, who come from Bangladesh, who come from North Africa, who pour into London and other cities across Britain, collecting welfare and free government housing and free healthcare, and they are basically living off the fat of the land. But here is the kicker. Here is the kicker. Michael, if you're listening, you want to talk about a rich irony? This is, to me, the irony of all ironies. While you're being banned, for what? Among us, for what? Because you are warning of the dangers of radical Islam? Because you are warning of the threat of jihadism that it poses across the Middle East and in Europe and in America? because you say that multiculturalism is completely impotent and unable to confront this fanatical growing fascist threat? This somehow makes you so dangerous? Have you ever once, ever, called for anybody to be killed? No. Have you ever urged violence upon anybody? No. You just defend your conservative point of view vigorously on the public airwaves. That's it. That's all. Peacefully, civilly, humanly. And yet, and I want to read this directly from the memo. According to a poll, this is Jackie Smith now writing to the State Department. According to a poll of 600 Muslim and 800 non-Muslim students at 30 universities throughout the United Kingdom, conducted by the Center for Social Cohesion. In fact, I know the Center for Social Cohesion. It's a major and well-respected think tank in London. So this is not some dinky poll. This is a very important poll. Here it is. 32% of Muslims on UK campuses believe killing in the name of religion is justified. Let me repeat that. 32% of Muslims on UK campuses believe killing in the name of religion is justified. 54% wanted a Muslim party to represent their worldview in Parliament. And 40% want Muslims in the United Kingdom to be under Sharia law. That's where homosexuals are stoned and beheaded. That's where women who commit adultery either have their hair cut off or are beaten or can even also be executed. That's the glory of Sharia law. 40% of Muslims want in the United Kingdom want to be under Sharia law, those that are on university campuses. And now you have to ask yourself this question. Many of you are aware of the Swedish Christmas bomber, the man who hit the Christmas shopping areas just last week, Tamir Abdul Wahab, a Swedish citizen who was never radical in any way, shape, or form. In fact, his friend said he never cared about politics until he went to a British university campus. And in 2001, he became radicalized. And within 8-9 years, he became a suicide bomber. And on the streets of Stockholm, while people are out Christmas shopping, just last week, he blew himself up to pieces and wounded two others. Last year, while many of us were enjoying Christmas turkey, Abdul Muttalib, a Muslim from Nigeria, went to Britain. And he was radicalized also on a British university campus. And he flew on a plane to Detroit with explosives in his underwear. And by the grace of God, he only burned himself but failed to blow up the plane that would have killed thousands of people both on board and on the ground. And I ask you, why are these radicals on British campuses, why are they not banned from Britain? How come they're allowed to walk and roam the streets of London and of Manchester and of Birmingham? But Michael Savage, who never hurt a fly, who never called for violence or retribution or hatred against anybody, he is to be banned? We now know from Jackie Smith's own memo, from her own words, that the enemy in Britain doesn't lie in San Francisco. It doesn't lie in the studios of Michael Savage. It lies right there in England. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. The question before the House is, what do you expect to find in these WikiLeaks cable about Jackie Smith's drive to ban Michael Savage from Britain? Do you think we're going to find a damaging smoking gun? What do you think we're going to find? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Down, down, USA!
Down, down, USA!
New- Washington!
Nuke, Washington!
Bomb, Pentagon!
Bomb, Pentagon!
Death to Tony Blair!
Death to Tony Blair!
Death to George Bush!
Death to George Bush!
This was a protest in England, in fact, before Michael Savage was banned, obviously led by many radical Muslims in the British community. And my question is a very simple one. How come they're not banned? Michael Savage is banned. He's supposedly a threat to the national security of England. So he's such a threat, he can't enter the shores of England. But these people, no problem. Look at the double standard and the hypocrisy. My friends, this ban must be overturned. The sooner, the better. Let's go to Ronnie in New York on line four.
Hi, I just wanted to say that all over the world, it's not just heroes like Michael Savage who try and speak out, but all over the world this happens. And I wanted to illuminate one terrible example that you see in a place like Israel, where they are saving refugees from Darfur, from the desert, while the Egyptians are shooting them down, while they never, ever torture anybody, where their neighbors like Jordan and the Palestinians murder the entire families of people that they're interrogating to loosen their tongues, where you have terrorists that come into their stores and kill only civilians in nightclubs and restaurants, but they spend millions of dollars on technology to limit the damage only to terrorists when they shoot. They're the
Ronnie, you didn't get the memo, my friend. It's a religion of peace. What's the matter with you? Come on, what are you talking about? It's peace everywhere. It's peace in Gaza. It's peace in Darfur. It's peace in England. It's peace in America. Hey, come on now. The threat is not the radical Islam and these jihadists. It's Michael Savage. Haven't you gotten the memo yet? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Members of the Savage Nation, we have a very special caller on line one. Boys, let's introduce our treat to the Savage audience.
Well, Jeff, I'm calling because what you just did for me has not been done by anyone to date, including my very expensive legal team in England and in the U.S. You were Clarence Darrow to the defense, Jeff. I tell you, I normally try not to pay much attention to what people say about me, but I listened to the impassioned element of what you were saying and how you said it. And I know you from what you write and what you believe in. This message, forget about me, about the Muslims in England, how many of them are deadbeats on welfare, how many of them believe in violence and killing. How in the world could they not see what's going on under their own noses, Jeff?
Michael, that's the question that, frankly, I've been asking myself now really since September 11. And, you know, I can't tell you what a thrill it is to have you on the air and to be actually talking to you person to person.
Well, I'm recovering from a pretty bad back, thing. Who knows, I never had one all my whole life. I've been very lucky, but things happen. Everything comes to an end, and everything changes in a person's life at a moment's notice. That's what we've heard all our lives, and we don't think it's going to happen to us. But anyway, here I am, and I'm listening to you, and I'm saying, where was this guy, why can't the lawyers present it? Why hasn't Hillary Clinton presented this argument? Why hasn't one conservative senator gotten up on the floor and said one damn word about this situation and how I'm the only member of the American media who's been banned? Where are the great Jim DeMint and all the other so-called conservatives? Not one of them has ever said a word about this on the House floor or the Senate floor.
Michael, let me ask you this, my friend. Has the pressure, look, you're banned. Obviously, they've put you on a high target list. They put you with some very unsavory, murderous characters.
Finish the sentence, okay, because we know what you're saying. We know where you're going. Let's put it to you this way. They changed my life for the worse. They turned me into a criminal. for speaking what most Americans know to be true. Anyone with a brain knows I'm right. In fact, most people in Britain know I'm right.
Michael.
Has it affected me? Yes. The burden has become almost too much for me to carry. And, you know, people say psychosomatic illness. You know, back pain is typically psychosomatic and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's good enough to know it's psychosomatic. It doesn't mean it ends because you know that. So, in other words, at a certain point, the burden becomes too heavy. That this burden, coupled with the care fight...
Why do you think, Michael, why do you think so many conservatives in the mainstream media, at Fox News, on talk radio, you mentioned Jim DeMint, people in the Tea Party movement, people that you've championed or you've championed their causes, why haven't they rallied to you?
Well, let's start with the obvious. People in the radio, such as the golfer and the wall banger, as I believe, are simply con men who have used the conservative movement to get ahead, and they're Republican fronts. The Republican Party wants a man like me nullified because, I've been sort of the independent leader for years in radio. Long before there was a Tea Party, in essence, I was rallying the independents in this country to understand both parties were screwing them and not representing them. So naturally, both parties hated me, including George Bush's little old Republican group of fake conservatives, little C conservatives, and they're reinventing George Bush right now. I mean, I don't know where you stand on it. I'm shocked by what they're doing.
Well, yeah, they're presenting him now as some small government conservative. Karl Rove is running around saying
he... I don't understand that people call up the show and get angry at me for not saluting George Bush, the man who gave us the largest government in history. The man who tried to seduce us with the Dubai ports deal, which would have devastated our security. I should be given a Nobel Prize for what I did for this country by preventing the folks from Dubai from taking over our port security. But I don't need a prize, Jeff. All I wanted to do was say thank you very much for being on the show and championing the cause and doing it in such a brilliant manner. Really, that's the point of the call, not to take over your show.
Michael, my friend, this is the highest compliment anyone has ever given to me, and I want you to know you're a hero of mine, and I know you're a hero to many conservatives, you're a hero to many Americans, and Michael, I know this for a fact because I go to Britain, you are a hero to many people in Britain.
Well,
believe me, they want you in Britain. They'd love to hear your show in Britain.
The lie is so great, Jeff. The propaganda is so complete from the Associated Press and the other vermin of the left, that most Americans have now been hoodwinked into believing that I've been removed from the list. You go on the internet, they say he was once banned, but he overturned it. No, I haven't overturned it. I'm still on the list with murderers and terrorists. I'm still not able to enter Britain, while some of those who would kill them and cut their throats and blow up the parliament itself are revered as citizens of the British Empire.
Michael, have your lawyers contacted David Cameron's government? I mean, they are supposedly a conservative government. Have they?
They did right off the bat. And you know what they got back? They got more of an insult than they got from the Brown government. The Cameron government turned out to be more of a fake than the other government. There's no conservative element in England at all. Not in the government, per se. Not in the ruling elite, per se. There are some people in the House of Lords who have supported me. There are people in the lower house of parliament who support me, but they're few and far between, and they're all dummying up, and they're all basically towing the party line of an England that is in the descent, an England that if this was 1939, they should be getting out their German-English dictionaries. They may as well get out their English-Arabic dictionaries.
Michael, what would happen if let's say I bought myself and I bought you a ticket to go to London? You and I can go to one of those lousy restaurants in London. And I say, Michael, you know what? Let me treat you to a horrible English dinner. Let's fly on a British Airways flight to London. We land in London. What would they do to you?
I'd be thrown and turned away. I mean, people have told me to do it, but I'm way past stunts. I don't need a stunt. I need that government to remove my name and apologize to me. But let's forget the English government. I'm an American citizen. Why has this government not taken up my cause? Well, we know that they're far-left radicals. I wouldn't expect Hillary to do it, nor Obama. But where's the conservatives in this country? Why has Jim DeMint been so silent? I've had him on the show. How come he hasn't written one letter on my behalf? There's only one congressman who did so. One. John Culberson of Texas. Tried to intervene. Got nowhere. One. But what if 10 senators did? What if members of the Senate, whatever committee that has any interaction with England did it? Then we'd get some results, wouldn't we? But they won't do it. Why? Because they could care less about the ordinary American, no matter what happens to them. The fact is they better wake up real fast, because what just happened in October, Jeff, is only the beginning of what's coming in this country. 70 Democrats were thrown out on their red behinds, and this has produced almost no change in this country. Take a look at what the Republicans are doing to us right now. Business as usual. Pork barrel as usual. Earmarks as usual. They're feasting in the mud. They feel they're immune. They think the people have nowhere to go. Little do they know that the people have somewhere else to go, and they will throw them out. The next election will be a devastation for the Republican Party. You can mark that one down. The next election will be a wholesale slaughter. Every Republican who's playing this game will be thrown out in their behind. Complete unknowns are going to run against them and win.
Michael, when you have, whatever, when you bring these Republicans on your show and you interview them, do you ever ask them on the air point blank, hey, look, buddy, I'm giving you airtime, 8-10 million people, my listeners.
No, I never do a quid pro quo. I never try to bargain with them. I don't know. There's a part of me that's sort of embarrassed by that, truthfully. And I figure, well, you know, they kind of should do it on their own, but I guess I should demand it.
I mean, that's what I would do. I just put them on the spot. I would just say, hey, look, where do you stand on me being banned? Show me your true conservative credentials. Where's your guts? Where are you going to stand up for freedom of speech? I'm an American citizen. I've been blackballed in Britain. They've put a target on my back. Are you going to stand up for freedom, yes or no?
What can I say, Jeff? I mean, I'm not here to complain or to cry about it. I'm just here to say, really, thank you for what you said. I thought that your discourse, where you began and where you end and how you laid it out of what is actually going on in England and the nature of the Muslim immigrant in England and what they are doing to that society, how even the government itself knows what they're doing to the society, and how they used me as a fall guy, I thought that was a very brilliant Clarence Darrow-type defense. I've asked my guys up there, Doug, to send me a tape, a CD. I'm going to send it to my attorneys. Maybe they'll play it on the floor of the House of Parliament, Jeff. It'll be you giving the speech, not me.
Thank you so much. Michael, look, since I have you on, I got to ask you this question, all right? It's something I've always wanted to ask you, and I know many of your audience wants to get this answer from you as well.
Right.
Standing at the point in your life that you are now, immensely successful, you've just had a huge bestseller, you're writing a couple more spy thrillers, you've revolutionized talk radio, you've been banned in Britain, you fought almost every battle there is to fight. Do you believe Western civilization is doomed? Do you truly believe that Europe, England, and eventually America are going to go into the dustbin of history? Or do you think there's hope for the future?
Wow. Well, you're putting a crystal ball in front of my eyes and say, read into it. My statement, which is rather comedic but very serious, is the only one I can give you. Only the soccer thugs can save England. The bold peasantry that Oliver Goldsmith wrote about in the 1700s are, in fact, the soccer thugs of today. They are the descendants of the men who tilled the fields and forged the iron. Not the vermin called the elites. The vermin called the elites have capitulated and are the very same people who capitulated to Nazi Germany in 1939. Unless there is a revolution in England, England is finished. It's the same in every other European country. This is a repeat of history, as you well know. There have been battles in the past when Muslims try to take over Europe, and it was only when the knights turned them back at cities like Poitiers in France that the Muslim invasion was stopped. But this time it's a different kind of Muslim invasion. This time it's an economic and social invasion using the Trojan horse of liberalism to completely parasitize and paralyze the societies that they've invaded without virtually firing a shot. By going on welfare, by not working, by going to the universities and turning them into in essence, fronts of radical Islam, what do they need to fire a shot for? When you have a liberalism, which is pacifist and fundamentally incapable of defending itself, why do they need a war when they're conducting it with the enemy's own laws of liberalism? And that brings us right back to America. Is it much different here? It isn't different here except by numbers. And so the answer, we tried it with the Tea Parties. We tried it with the throwing the 70 Democrats out of, look what we have. We have Mitch the Gobbler McConnell. We have John the Crybaby Boehner. And we have the same slash and burn spending that we had before the 70 got thrown out. So what message does that send to the people who know what's going on, Jeff?
And Michael, I mean, do you...
That's another story. There needs to be a charismatic leader who is not a racist. We need a patriot. We need a nationalist who is not a racist. Does he exist? Does she exist? It's possible. I just don't know who it might be. We're all waiting for that charismatic leader to arise and lead this country out of the abyss. Whether or not that individual exists or can exist in this drugged-up, psychopathic nation that we're living in is another story. And I have to leave that up to fate and God. I don't have an answer.
Would you run for office?
Never.
Would you be that leader?
No, I can't be the leader. It's impossible. It's impossible. I don't have the nature to be a leader. I hate to put it in biblical terms, but remember when God went to Moses and said, you're going to lead your people out of the desert, remember? And Moses said, wait a minute, don't pick on me. I have an impediment. I have a speech impediment. In essence, I have a bad back. You know, what are you picking on me for? Pick Charlton Heston. And God said, no, I'm picking you because you have a speech impediment. I'm picking you because you are imperfect. I'm picking you because you're not central casting, right? But that was then, and this is now. And the forces of oppression, and I mean the oppression of the free spirit, have never been greater than they are today in America. Never have they ever been to this extent, whether it be drugs or propaganda or the media, you name it. The pressures against the true individual have never been greater than they are today. And on that pleasant note, Mr. Kuhner, I will let you go because I wanted to just say thank you. It's gone on too long. I really didn't mean to really step on it. As a rule in radio, you have someone filling in, leave them alone, let them do it.
Michael, thank you. My buddy, you've paid me the highest compliment, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, my friend. God bless you, Michael.
Thanks for taking my cause. Thanks, Jeff Kuhner.
Take care. My friends, we'll be right back after this break here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Members of the Savage Nation, you just heard Dr. Savage himself. I got to tell you, it was the thrill of my lifetime. I actually got a chance to interview him. And there you heard it, straight from Michael. You know, he's obviously carrying a heavy cross. This has been a very, very tough ordeal, being banned from Britain. These latest WikiLeaks cables show, obviously, that Jackie Smith, the former Home Secretary, was very concerned about the rising threat of radical Islam in England. And yet, what did she do? She turned around and committed that atrocity against Michael. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my friend, for the incredible honor of having you call in and to speak to you. And please keep up the good fight, buddy. I got your back, and the members of the Savage Nation have your back. Just very quickly, you want to see just how right Michael is on some issues? The START Treaty, the arms reduction treaty between the United States and Russia, a disastrous treaty if it passes and is ratified this weekend. Harry Reid is trying to jam it through this Sunday before they leave town. And here in Trickle Up Poverty, in Michael Savage's best-selling book, on page 269, underneath a subhead called Obama the Destroyer. I want to read to you just a few passages because it captures the essence of what is wrong about this treaty and about the radical left in America. On April 8th, 2010, Obama the Destroyer attacked America's sovereignty and safety by signing the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, START, in Prague, Czech Republic, with Russian President Medvedev. Let's not mince words. This treaty is the work of the mentally disordered left. If the U.S. Senate ratifies the treaty, America will have to slash our nuclear arsenal by 33% while cutting in half the number of missiles, the submarine fleet, and our strategic bombers that deliver them. You might want to read that again. As bad as these cuts are in terms of our national security, the Obama regime has further handcuffed America's position on how we can use what few nuclear weapons we still possess. As detailed in the 2010 Nuclear Posture Review, the NPR, the United States will not use or threaten to use nuclear weapons against non-nuclear weapon states that are party to the Non-Proliferation Treaty and in compliance with their nuclear non-proliferation obligations. In other words, if we're attacked with chemical or biological weapons by Russia, Obama has promised he won't retaliate with nuclear weapons. My friends, you heard it straight from Michael Savage. This is a surrender of the highest order.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow and ready to go. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my good friend, for the incredible honor and opportunity of filling in for you tonight. Members of the Savage Nation, go to michaelsavage.com for all the latest stories. Things now are being jammed through Congress. The $1.1 trillion omnibus spending bill, Dirty Harry Reid, Nancy the Piranha Pelosi, they are now looking to ram this down our throats. They want to ram a tax deal down our throats. They want to ram gays in the military down our throats. And one thing in particular that Obama is just licking his chops to get ratified this weekend before the Democrats and Republicans leave town before Christmas, is to get the START Treaty ratified. As Michael Savage points out in his book, Trickle Up Poverty, if the START Treaty is ratified, it will be a tremendous blow to American national security. It imposes massive cuts on our nuclear arsenal. And not just cuts in our nuclear weapons, but as Michael points out in his book, it will slash by half many of our delivery systems, many of the submarines that we need. In other words, everything that we need to be able to develop and launch our nuclear arsenal. It is a form of unilateral surrender. And so the question that I have for you, members of the Savage Nation, is if the Republican Party, if Mitch McConnell, if John McCain, if John Kyle, if all of these supposedly leading Republican hawks do not stand up in the Senate and block this treaty, do you believe that they have betrayed this country, their party, and the conservative movement? Because when you stand back and look at this treaty, the question that I have is a very simple one. Why in God's name would any self-respecting nation, never mind the world's last great superpower, agree to sign START? From however you look at it, it is a bad treaty from all the way to the top to all the way to the bottom. Number one, what many in the liberal mainstream media will not tell you is that the Russian nuclear arsenal is rusting. They're literally decaying and rusting in their silos. They have to cut their nuclear arsenal. They have no choice. The Russians don't have the money. Putin has been literally spending money like it's vodka. He is bankrupting Russia. He has stolen billions of dollars, that entire criminal elite that surrounds him in the Kremlin. While the poor Russian is starving, they are plundering the country's resources. They can't even fund their military. They can't even fund schools and roads and hospitals. Never mind upkeep and modernize their nuclear arsenal. So they have no choice but to let their obsolete weapons literally go into the scrapyard. So why are we negotiating with a Russian bear that is already wounded and dying? Face down in the vodka. That to me is the stunning development. This is not the Russia of 20, 30 years ago. This is not the vaunted Soviet Union that was once a superpower. This is now an economic basket case. A third-rate power whose population is dying from AIDS, from alcoholism, from drugs, from frankly a low birth rate. And as that nation is dying, Putin is running around in his dachas with his new 27-year-old mistress, who now apparently is on the cover of Russian Vogue, causing a big scandal in Russia. He's too busy with his mistresses. He's too busy partying it up late in the Kremlin, drinking a vodka and eating caviar, for him to be concerned about modernizing or revamping Russia's nuclear arsenal. So we, in fact, are imposing cuts upon ourselves when we don't need to. The Russians are going to cut their arsenal. They have nowhere to go but down. That's point number one. Point number two, as Michael brilliantly points out in his book, not only does this slash our nuclear arsenal, but here is the kicker. This is what is so dangerous about this treaty. As we slash our nuclear arsenal, START lays out, codifies that if we are attacked by biological or chemical weapons, if there is some chemical or biological weapon attack, an anthrax attack on American soil or upon American troops, and if the Russians happen to be behind it, as we know they are supporting the Iranian mullahs, as we know they are backing the communist Chinese, as we know they are backing Hezbollah and Hamas, if they end up being the ones that supply the anthrax, the poison, we cannot retaliate with nuclear weapons against Russia. Now you may say, Jeff, what are you, insane? You're calling for a nuclear war? No. What I'm saying is, we have had a nuclear deterrent ever since we've had the atomic bomb. This is what has kept the peace in the world. And a deterrent is useless unless you say we are willing to use it. But now, on paper, on this treaty now literally ties our hands. It says if there is a biological or chemical weapons attack, if a signatory signs START, meaning the Russians, then we cannot attack with a nuclear arsenal. We cannot have a nuclear retaliatory attack. So we are, in a sense, tying our own hands. We are basically telling the Russians, if you unleash an attack upon us with biological or chemical weapons, we cannot respond with our nuclear deterrent. We are slowly, systematically dismantling our national security. And to me, the final point, and maybe the mother of all points, as Saddam Hussein would have put it. What in God's good name is the greatest power in the history of the world? The country that keeps world peace. The country that liberated Europe from Nazi occupation. That defeated the Soviet totalitarian giant. The country that just recently has liberated 50 million Muslims from fascist rule in Afghanistan and Iraq. And we are now to slash our own nuclear arsenal? When that is the only thing that is keeping us safe? When that is the only deterrent that we effectively have from a potential third world war? Contrary to the lies and myths of the leftist elite in this country, of the likes of softball Chris Matthews or Oberman, Keith Oberman, and all those on MSNBC, North Korean TV, who keep shouting, we have to sign this treaty. World peace hangs in the balance. We have to sign this treaty. No, we don't. Hey, softball, Ogerman, relax. The world's not going to come to an end if this treaty is not signed. Don't worry about it. The Russians aren't going to attack us. They're not going to launch a devastating nuclear attack. Hey, listen, believe me, those rusty missiles of theirs are useless anyway. But what are we doing unilaterally disarming? Why are we slashing our arsenal? Why are we weakening our military and nuclear strength? We should be modernizing our missiles. We should be developing missile defense. We should be strengthening our defenses, not weakening them. And so here again, you see the enemy within, slowly eroding and undermining American power, American will, American strength. This is what is going on. And to me, what good are the Republicans? The one thing you expect somebody like John McCain to be good on, or John Kyle, especially John McCain, the Hanoi Hilton, the Vietnam War vet, he's the guy. You think that they should stand up and say, this is a bad treaty. But even more than that, not only is it a bad treaty, what is the role of the Senate in our Constitution? What is it that George Washington and James Madison and Thomas Jefferson explicitly said about the Senate? That it is the Senate that has to debate a treaty and ratify it with a two-thirds majority. That's the deliberative role of the Senate. That's why it's called supposedly the world's greatest deliberative body. Are they deliberating? We don't even know what's in the treaty. Half of it is in Russian. I have people, Republicans, telling me, Jeff, on the Hill, they're telling me, Jeff, we don't even know what's in the treaty. And they want to ram this thing through before Christmas so they can all go home and Obama can go to Hawaii and have his beach vacation. He can go and party it up on the beach in Hawaii. They're not even willing to take the necessary several weeks to have hearings, to read the treaty, to have experts talk about the implications of this treaty, and to educate the American public. They don't want you to know what's in this treaty. Because if you find out what's in this treaty, you and everybody else in this country is going to say, are you insane? And so here you have the Senate. Dirty Harry Reid. You remember under Obama with Harry Reid and all these other liberal Democrats, Ted Kennedy when he was alive, and all of these leftists, Chuck Schumer, all of them coming out, Hillary Clinton when she was a senator. Oh, Bush is eroding the prerogatives of the Senate. Bush is undermining the prerogatives of the Senate. Oh, the Senate has been bypassed by Bush, the Bush-Cheney-Hitler junta, the Bush-Cheney-Hitler-Halliburton junta. Well, what about now? What about the prerogatives of the Senate now, Mr. Reid, Mr. Durbin, Mr. Schumer, Mr. Kerry, Foreign Relations Committee chairman who's running around on every television saying, we have to pass it. We have to pass it. We have to pass this treaty. You don't even want to take the necessary few weeks to hold hearings, to see what's in the bill? That's how desperate you are to sell out this country? That's how desperate you are to give Obama a diplomatic victory? That's all what this is about. So Obama can present himself to the New York Times and his leftist friends and people around the world as the great peacemaker. You gave me a Nobel Peace Prize? Here it is. Here's the justification for it. I've given us world peace with the Russians. I've slashed our nuclear arsenal. I'm a nuclear pacifist. That's what this is about. It is about his radical agenda. It is about his betrayal of America. And ultimately, like everything else, it is about satisfying his own ego. And so the question I have for all of you is a simple one. If Republicans do not stand up and block the ratification of START, will you say that this is a fundamental betrayal of America? What does this say about Republicans if they cannot speak out against START? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
There's too much at stake for America's national security. And don't tell me about Christmas. I understand Christmas. I have been a senator for a long time. I've been there many years where we go right up to Christmas. There's 10 days between now and Christmas. I hope I don't get in the way of your Christmas shopping, but this is the nation's business. This is a national security's at stake. Act. Act.
That was Vice President Joe the Brawler Biden basically telling Republicans, get out of the way. This treaty has to be passed. And it has to be passed now. Look at the thug that Biden is. What's the matter, Joe? You are in the Senate. You mean the Senate can't take a few weeks to debate this? The Senate can't take a few weeks to look and actually what's in this treaty? No. We got to pass it out before Christmas, huh, Joe? It's that crucial to world peace. My friends, if you believe that, I have some swampland in Florida you may be interested in. Let's go to Donna in New York on line 5. Donna, thanks for holding, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff. You paint a frightening picture. And yes, the Republicans will be betraying us if they do not do everything, including a filibuster, to stop this. Let's remember, less than 10 years ago, Putin was responsible for invading Georgia. Has anyone considered the consequences to our allies, to the countries, and to the freedom-struggling and loving people around the world that we are supposed to be protecting? We can't protect ourselves. How can we protect them? It's going to be so easy to blackmail us and to sacrifice Taiwan, the Eastern European countries, and all different parts around the world. And the loss of human life is going to be dreadful.
Donna, you hit the nail right on the head, and I want to thank you for that call. Never mind the fact that he invaded Georgia and annexed several of his provinces. Never mind that he waged a genocidal war in Chechnya. Never mind that he threatens Ukraine, Belarus, and Eastern Europe. Leave all that off the table. You want to know what kind of a man Vladimir Putin is? You want to see what a sick psychopath he is? 10 years ago, when he was running for president of Russia, the Russian media has now confirmed that he ordered the FSB to launch terrorist attacks in Russia, where apartment buildings were blown up in downtown Moscow. The secret police was ordered by Putin to blow up apartment buildings that were filled with Russian citizens, and they were slaughtered, and then he blamed it on the Chechen terrorists. He killed his own people to manufacture a war to get himself reelected. That's the kind of man Vladimir Putin is. And my friends, that's why we cannot pass START. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
As a Christian, no one has to remind me of the importance of Christmas for all of the Christian faith, all their families all across America.
Yep.
I don't think any of us, I don't need to hear the sanctimonious lectures of Senator Kyle DeMint to remind me of what Christmas means.
Yep.
My question Madam President, yes. is where were their concerns about Christmas? Is it that filibuster after filibuster on major piece of legislation during this entire Congress?
That was Dirty Harry Reid today on the Senate floor blasting Republicans for trying to filibuster a whole slew of legislation that the Democrats are trying to ram down our throats before they leave for the Christmas break. Members of the Savage Nation, this is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. What we now have is a farce unfolding here in Washington. As the 111th Congress, the lame duck Congress, limps away into oblivion, you would think that the Democrats, having been shellacked and decimated in November, 63 members defeated in the House, the Republicans picking up 6 seats in the Senate, Nancy Pelosi gone, Harry Reid bloodied and badly weakened, you think that they would get the lesson from the American public that we are sick and tired of socialism. We are sick and tired of big government liberalism. We are sick and tired of Obama's radical agenda. No. This is what is remarkable. Here you have Dirty Harry Reid. Now, with a few days left in the session, not only trying to ram the START treaty down our throats without it being properly vetted and debated on the Senate floor, but now he has cooked up a $1.1 trillion omnibus spending bill, a massive spending package that combines 12 spending bills into one, loaded with pork, loaded with earmarks, over 6,000 earmarks, billions of dollars in wasteful giveaway projects. And this is on top of the $900 billion tax deal that the Republicans hammered out with Obama. My friends, we're going broke. This is what I find remarkable. I was saying this to my wife last night. I said, honey, am I the only last sane man left in Washington? There's no more money. The country is literally on the verge of financial bankruptcy. Our debt has now tripled under Obama. It has skyrocketed. Under Bush and Obama, we have now amassed more debt than our country has in the first 225 years of its history. We are now approaching $14 trillion in total national debt. That's almost our GDP, 100% of our gross domestic product. Do you know what that is? That's Greece. That's Portugal. That's Ireland. That is a level of debt compared to your economy that no country has ever come back from. We are spending ourselves into oblivion. So here you have these Republicans led by John Bonehead Boehner and Mitch McConnell going around saying, oh, we got a great tax deal with the president. We're extending the Bush tax rates for another 2 years. Really? Who's going to pay for it, Boehner? Who's going to pay for it, McConnell? All of these gimmicky little tax reductions that you've put in there, all of those earned income tax credits, wind power credits, all of these things that Obama finagled out of you guys, the extension of unemployment benefits for 13 months. Who the hell is unemployed for 13 months? That's welfare in disguise. It's basically massive welfare. That's what we're doing now. We have 99 weeks of unemployment now in America. Now, if you get unemployed, basically you're entitled to not work for nearly 2 years. Just under 2 years. Is that not welfare? And what nobody is asking themselves is how do we pay for it? This is going to cost $900 billion. It's going to add that to the debt. There are no offsetting spending cuts. Look, don't get me wrong. I am a conservative. I am a believer in limited constitutional government and in the free market. I believe the worst thing to do in a recession is to raise taxes. In fact, what you should do is cut taxes. Calvin Coolidge did it. John Kennedy did it. Ronald Reagan did it. and the economy boomed. In fact, tax revenues soared. But you pay for them. You don't just stand there and give these temporary extensions and pat yourself on the back and say, oh my God, look at us. Hey, we got the estate tax at 35%. The Democrats wanted it 45%. Aren't we great? We got the Bush tax rates extended for 2 years. My God, aren't we profiles in courage? No, you're not. Because you're lying to the American people. You just ran in November on an election in which you told us that the deficit and the debt was your number one concern. Isn't that what the Tea Party was telling them? Stop the spending. Stop the deficits. Stop the soaring debt. So what do? Their first challenge, their first deal, right out of the blocks, $900 billion in a tax deal that we can't afford. You can't find the offsetting spending cuts? If you don't have the courage to cut the size of government, don't make a deal. Because I'm old-fashioned. As I tell my wife all the time, honey, buy whatever you want. I love you to death. But make sure that there's as much coming in as there is going out. Balance the books. Period. Full stop, as my father would say. And now, on top of this tax deal, they're going to ram through a $1.1 trillion massive spending bill. It's money we can't afford. In fact, even in this bill, there is money in there to fund Obamacare for the next 2 years. So when Republicans say we're going to defund it, you can't. This bill will make sure it's properly funded for the next 2 years. So now you have the Republicans capitulating on every front. Now you have Scott Brown from Massachusetts, that phony Republican, saying he's going to support gays in the military. So now it was passed in the House. Gays in the military now may pass in the Senate. Look at what is slowly happening to our country. We are bankrupting our government. We are spending ourselves into bankruptcy. We have now unleashed a healthcare system that will destroy the greatest healthcare system in the world. We have revolutionized healthcare, and now we're going to destroy our military. This is an all-out assault upon American traditional values, upon the American traditional way of life, upon the very system that America was built on. And where are the Republicans? Aren't they supposed to be the conservative opposition? Aren't they the ones who told us they learned their lessons from Jack Abramoff? And from getting defeated and trounced in 2006, they were all born again fiscal hawks. Tell me, Boehner. Tell me, McConnell. Where are you guys? Why can't you filibuster this $1 trillion spending bill? Why won't you stand up against gays in the military? Why won't you stand up against START? Why don't you stand up against this tax deal? Because, my friends, let us be very clear now. Let us cut to the chase. What they care about is power. And what they're not stupid men. They read the papers like you and I do. They watch television. And what do they see? They look across the Atlantic. And they look at Athens and Paris and London and Dublin. And they see massive strikes and protests and rioters. They see what massive spending reductions, what austerity measures cause. It leads to people coming out on the streets. It leads to social unrest. Spending cuts are deeply unpopular with some segments of the population. Those hooked on welfare. Those hooked on government spending. You want to know the most important statistic? There's only one statistic you need to know. And that tells you everything how this country has changed in the last several years. How the America of our founding fathers is gone, maybe forever. The wealthiest, most educated area in America is Washington, D.C. That is the wealthiest area in America. Think of that. The capital of America, where the seat of government is located, that's where all our talent goes to. That's who are the wealthiest. Those that are enriching themselves off the fat of the land. the lobbyists, the bureaucrats, the government politicians. They're the ones that now are making all the money. What happened to that? That America is all about business, that the business of America is business, as Calvin Coolidge said. We were once an entrepreneurial people. We were once a free people. We were once a capitalist people. The wealthiest areas used to be New York, Chicago, Southern California, where Reagan and Nixon came from. That's where all the talent and entrepreneurship lay. That's where all the energy and dynamism lay. Not anymore. Now, government runs America. Socialism runs America. The bureaucracy runs America. So you come here to get rich. You come here to make a lot of money. Join the public unions. Join the bureaucracy. Become a fat cat lobbyist. Roll around with the Republicans. Roll around with the Democrats. Everybody gets rich in Washington, and you get poorer. My friends, we have lost our way. And if you cannot say, as a party and as a movement, we will not mortgage the future of our children and grandchildren. Call me primitive, call me old-fashioned, but my grandfather taught me, God rest his soul, that you balance your budget. You don't live off somebody else. You carry your own water in life. You take care of yourself and your family. I swear to you, my father and grandfather, both of them immigrants from the old country, fled communism, never took a dime, a penny of welfare or unemployment insurance a day in their life. My grandfather said, I'd rather commit suicide than be on welfare. He goes, you know what a shame it is to be on welfare? That I can't, an able-bodied man, I can't get some work to feed my family? That I would even have my neighbor pay for me and subsidize me as I live in my home and not work? It's immoral. And this is what we've become as a nation? That now I'm not even talking anymore about welfare. I'm not even talking about the basics. I'm talking about this. When you can't afford your home, when you can't afford the sports cars, the SUVs, the outdoor pool, the indoor pool, the cocaine parties, okay, everything that this spending binge that this country has been on, literally, this is what our country's been reduced to. And now you're going to buy a luxury yacht. That's the $900 billion tax deal. That's the $1.1 trillion omnibus. It's now the luxury yacht. And now the Republicans are saying, maybe we don't need the leather seats on that yacht. Maybe we can trim a little here or trim a little there. What would be your answer? You'd say, you're insane. There's no money. We can't afford the cars. We can't afford the SUVs. We can't afford the house. We can't afford the pools. We can't afford the cocaine. We can't afford the whiskey, the girls, the whole. We can't afford it. Forget the luxury yacht. This is what the Tea Party's been saying. We are spending ourselves into oblivion. We can't afford Obamacare. We can't afford the stimulus. We can't afford any of it. So we are literally like drunken geese walking in the fog. And where are the Republicans when you need them? They're busy cutting a deal with Obama. And so the question that I have for you is a very simple one. Why can Republicans not stand up and oppose Dirty Harry Reid's attempt to jam through every leftist wish list imaginable? Why is it that now, with a few days left, the radical left in this country, after doing nothing for the last couple of months, all of a sudden can now get a tax deal, can now get a massive spending increase, can now ram gays in the military, can now get START, can now get everything that they wanted to do in the last few days of a lame duck Congress? Why are the Republicans silent? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Let's go to Steve in New York on line five. Steve, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Huge fan. You know, you asked why. Here's why. The Senate in general, the Senate, you know, their problem is they have, you know, there are no term limits, and they're above the laws that they pass. So they're above Obamacare. They're above SEC law, which means they can commit insider trading. It's not a crime for them. They're rich beyond rich. They're multimillionaires. There have been studies, and only a ridiculous percent are not millionaires. And the average senator, it takes 2 years to go from being broke to being a millionaire. And the reason is, you know, part of it is you know, they are paid well for what they do, for how little they work when you consider it. But the rest is just investments. It's just being there, being on the inside track of these wind farms, you know, the companies that make the turbines, all this kind of stuff. So start and don't ask, don't tell, and all the rest of it. It doesn't matter to them. That doesn't resonate. What the American people want doesn't resonate. It's a game. It's almost like, why would a New York Yankee, when he gets a base hit, talk to the first baseman of the Boston Red Sox? Because it's a game. At the end of the day, they go and hang out and have a beer. The same way the senators, Republican and Democrat, fight. But, you know, they go and have lunch together at the end of the day.
Exactly. Steve, it's almost like you've been living in Washington, because that's what I see all the time. And what they do is, here's the dirty little secret. Is once they finish serving as politicians or working as politicians, they become lobbyists, all of them. So one hand washes the other. And they realize that once they become lobbyists, they make millions, if not tens of millions of dollars. So where do they put the people first? Where do they put America first? They don't. What they have done is they come to Washington to enrich themselves. That's the sad fact of the matter. Where are the patriots? Because believe me, there aren't any more left here in Washington, D.C., or if there are, you can count them on literally two hands. Let's go to Jerry in Chicago. Jerry, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. The reason why the START Treaty is good is that you want an incentive. You want a carrot to get a nation to sign on to the Non-Proliferation Treaty. If you do that, if you get them to sign on by stating you won't use nuclear weapons, if they're signatory to that, that reduces the number of regimes, of nations with nuclear weapons. Nations like Syria, nations like Libya, maybe nations like Burma. That's one of the reasons why the START Treaty should be signed or ratified. That would go to war with Russia. Extremely improbable.
Jerry, let me ask you this. Is Iran a signer of the Non-Proliferation Treaty?
Say that again?
Is Iran a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Treaty?
It's not a perfect system, but you're not going to get all nations.
The point is they are, you see, and they're still going to build a nuclear weapon. In other words, Jerry, you see, this is the fatal mistake that you're making, is what many liberals make. You think the world operates according to American rational legalistic procedures. It doesn't. A Putin, an Ahmadinejad, a Gaddafi, they don't operate by our rules of morality. For them, a piece of paper is literally that, a piece of paper. So we commit ourselves to a treaty while they feel free to break it. They arm, we disarm. My friends, it's the 1930s all over again. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, I guess my biggest failure was not getting reelected. And I learned two things. One is that you ought not to ever let American hostages be held for 444 days in a foreign country without extracting them. I did the best I could, but I failed.
That was good old boy Jimmy Carter saying one of his biggest failures was not extracting the hostages after 444 days. This is Jeff Kooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage here on the Savage Nation. Michael is off tonight. I will be filling in for him. Michael, I just want to thank you once again, my good friend, for the incredible honor and opportunity to fill in for you tonight. Go to michaelsavage.com. There are some absolute must-read stories. Let me just very quickly scroll down and just look at some of the stories that are up there. Basically, you have the world at your fingertips. Tea partiers should be boiling at $1.1 trillion bill. Yes, they should. This is the lead at Michael Savage in the top right corner. It's by Kyle Wingfield. And let me just read you the lead. It's as if we caught the thieves in our house red-handed and they're trying to stuff a few more pieces of jewelry in their bags before they flee. This is what Congress is now doing under Dirty Harry Reid and Nancy the Piranha Pelosi. Just, you think they had bankrupted America. You think Obamacare, the $1 trillion stimulus, the trillion-plus budget deficits of the last several years. No, you think that would be enough. No. They got to, literally, it's like pigs eating at a trough. It's never enough. One last big, healthy mouthful. $1.1 trillion, Merry Christmas. Michelle Bachmann, tax bill violates U.S. Constitution. You think? What I find remarkable is as these Republicans and Obama are going back and forth, extending the Bush tax cuts for 2 years, but Obama wants earned income tax credits and credits for clean energy, and he wants 13 months of unemployment extension benefits, and on and on and on. Nobody is asking a very simple question. How is the estate tax, the death tax, how is that constitutional? Tell me, where does it say in the Constitution that after you've worked your entire life to build up an estate for your family, that when you are dead, the state has the right, the legitimacy, to literally reach into your pockets, right into your coffin, and take 35 or 45 or 55%. What I find remarkable is you have Republicans saying 35%, Democrats saying 45%, and the Republicans get 35% after $5 million for the next 2 years, and all of a sudden you have a boner. Oh, no, hey, it's a great victory. We got a big concession out of Obama. It's 35% of what you're not entitled to. I don't care if it's 35 or 45%. It's 35% too much. There's only one rate that you should have for the death tax. Zero. Let me give you an example. I know somebody very close to my family, spent his entire life working, an immigrant from the old country, from Italy, scratched and clawed and saved to put a little something away for his family. He didn't go out to eat very much. He never took a vacation. He spent 25 years working construction, getting up at 4:30 every morning. He left a little business, a little estate for his family, for his children. That's what he lived for. That's what he worked for. Now you're going to tell me that because he built up a business and an estate for his family, because he wanted to give his children a better life than what he had in the old country in Italy, that suddenly the state has a right to come in there? Like, it's almost like, what do you want to do? It reminds me a bit of the Nazis in the concentration camp. What do you want to do? Pull the gold teeth out of the mouth? Pull out some gold teeth? Extract that as well? It's not enough to get 35, 45% of his income? You've taxed him his entire life. He paid his taxes. He played by the rules. Tell me, Why should you get a second bite at the apple? Why should he have to pay taxes on his income twice? He already paid it once. Oh, Democrats say, I see Anthony Weiner running around on Capitol Hill, that socialist, that communist, running around on Capitol Hill saying, well, they're dead. So too bad, they're dead. We have a right to tax them. They're dead. So what? They're dead. That money is what they earned. It's what they scrimped and saved for. It's what they toiled over. It's their blood, sweat, and tears. If they want to give it to their family members, because that's what they want to leave behind, a legacy, that's their business. You don't have a right to a penny of that estate. So Michelle Bachmann is completely right. You better believe it, this tax bill violates the U.S. Constitution. But when did we care about the U.S. Constitution? Have you noticed that 90% of the things that Congress does are blatantly unconstitutional? All you have to do is read Trickle Up Poverty. Just take a look at Michael Savage's book. He predicts it right there. He has a whole chapter in the book. The Obama health care law is blatantly unconstitutional. Forget whether you think we should have or not have socialized medicine. That's irrelevant. The fact of the matter is there is nowhere in the Constitution that says the federal government has the right to tell you where and when you can go buy your health insurance. The federal government can't compel you to buy a good or service. What's next? They're going to force you to buy a car? What's next? They're going to force you to buy a condom? What's next? I mean, literally, where does it stop? No, no, you got to have safe sex. You got to wear that condom. Come hell or high water. You got to get pumped up on Viagra. Hey, come on now. We want you to have a good time as we take all your money. No, no, you got to buy two cars. You got to buy a house. This is what they're they are now trying to compel us to buy health insurance. And if not, there is going to be severe penalties. And so recently, a federal district judge said no. The individual mandate is clearly illegal and unconstitutional. It's what Michael pointed out in his book. Most of what we pass in Congress that our politicians pass are clearly not what our founding fathers intended. If they wanted us to have socialized medicine, if they wanted the government to run and regulate and control healthcare, they would have said so. That's the beauty of our Constitution. If you want us to have socialized medicine, amend the Constitution. But don't tell me that you see rights there that don't exist. Don't so destroy the document. Don't so stretch the meaning of the document that words itself no longer have meaning. This is what they've been doing for 40 years. Roe v. Wade. Tell me, where in the Constitution does it say a woman has a right to kill her own baby? Point that out to me. They keep Roe v. Wade is established law. No, it isn't. Why? Because a couple of justices on the Supreme Court said it was? Because all of a sudden those sick liberals on that court said, you know what? A woman should have a right to kill her own baby. Go ahead, slaughter it. Slaughter as many as you want. Go ahead. That's what George Washington and Thomas Jefferson intended. When we seceded from Great Britain, we seceded to kill babies. You may not know that. Oh, and gay marriage. But yes, you have a right. Yeah, of course. It's there in the Constitution. You don't see it, but you don't understand. George Washington was a proto-gay rights activist. You don't know that, but don't worry. The liberals will tell you, no, he's a gay rights activist. They really wanted gays to marry. They really wanted women to kill babies. They really wanted to have socialized medicine. You may be too stupid when you read the actual document to see those words, those plain words. We're not dealing with plain words. We see the hidden meaning in things. This is what liberalism has done. They have perverted and destroyed our Constitution. And so now, you ask me, Jeff, what is a modern-day liberal? I'll tell you very simply what a modern-day liberal is. Michael Savage, when he says liberalism is a mental disorder, he's completely brilliant. He's completely dead on. I would add one other thing. A liberal is a self-hating American. Let me repeat that for all of you. A liberal is a self-hating American. Why do I say that? Because a liberal fundamentally hates the Constitution. He hates almost every aspect of it. He hates the Second Amendment. He hates the First Amendment. He doesn't want freedom of speech for conservatives on talk radio. He wants European-style hate speech laws. He hates the 10th Amendment, which says most of the power should go to the states and the people if it's not expressly delegated to the federal government. He hates the founding document of this country. They hate the fact that we are a nation that was born in revolution and born with a war. They despise that. In their view, in the liberal worldview, this country was based upon slavery, homophobia, and the exploitation of minorities and Indians. That's what liberals truly believe. That's what they teach our children. That we have been a racist, oppressive country. They are self-hating Americans. They hate our founding. They hate our roots. They hate our Judeo-Christian heritage. They hate the way we fought and won our wars. They hate everything about this country. That's why they love Obama. And that's why they liked Good Time Jimmy Carter. Because they apologized for America. Because they were ashamed of America. Because when they saw America, they saw a country that needs to be redeemed. When I look at America, I see a beautiful, virtuous nation, the freest, most prosperous country in the history of the world. I don't make apologies for America. I want to preserve it. I want to love it. I want to cherish it. And so the question that I have for all of you is a simple one. Do you believe that liberals still respect and adhere to the Constitution? And more than that, in the light of the Obama presidency, do you see any parallels between Obama, the failed liberal president who hates our Constitution, and Jimmy Carter, who was also a failed one-term liberal socialist president? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I'm confident and hopeful that we can work our way through all these things. That is, we're going to make sure that we still are going to move forward on the firefighters. We're going to move forward on the DREAM Act. We're going to move forward on the 9/11 New York situation. We're going to do something on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We of course, have to do something to fund the government through next year or into next year. And we have to do something about the tax cuts. All those things are on my agenda.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Members of the Savage Nation, literally this is breaking news hot off the wires just several minutes ago. Democrats controlling the Senate have abandoned a 2,000-page catch-all spending measure that's laced with home state pet projects known as earmarks. Harry Reid has given up on the nearly $1.3 trillion spending bill after several Republicans who had been thinking of voting for the bill pulled back their support. Christmas has come early. Dirty Harry has dropped the nearly $1.3 trillion spending monstrosity. At least on this particular issue, the Tea Party movement, and all of you out there, members of the Savage Nation, your voices were heard by congressional Republicans. Mitch McConnell, according to these wire stories that I'm reading right now, apparently in the last few days, under tremendous grassroots pressure, threw his weight against the bill in the last couple of days. As he put it, quote, "It was unbelievable that Democrats would try to muscle through in just a few days legislation that usually takes months to debate." So essentially, Harry Reid, although predicting he can get everything jammed through Congress, has now faced a major defeat with his huge omnibus spending bill. It just shows that if we keep the pressure on Republicans, if we stay active and vigilant, we can force them to do the right thing. And so in the wake of this breaking news, let me ask all of you another question, members of the Savage Nation. Do you think that there are many more victories possible for Republicans in blocking other desperate attempts by Harry Reid, let's say gays in the military? Let's say the DREAM Act, which would effectively give amnesty to students of illegal or children of illegal immigrants, people who are now students, children who are now students, who now want to get in-state tuition at the for colleges and universities. Do you believe that other radical attempts by Harry Reid to implement a leftist liberal agenda can be blocked by Republicans? If they can stop him on the this massive spending bill, do you think they can stop him elsewhere? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. You know, I have to tell you, what I find remarkable here is how incompetent and inept these Democrats are. They can't even ram through a spending bill when they still have the majorities in the House and in the Senate. Dirty Harry, if you can't pass what you want now, what are you going to do in January when you have even more Republicans to deal with? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. For all of you out there that are interested, I write a weekly column for the Washington Times. It comes out in every Friday's edition. In fact, if you go right now to WashingtonTimes.com, that's WashingtonTimes.com, on the right-hand corner, commentary section, you'll see my name, K-U-H, N as in Nancy, E-R, and I have my latest column called The Coming Republican Civil War, if you want to read it. The phone lines are jammed, 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to our busy callers. Howard in Michigan, thanks for holding, Howard. And let's go to Dave in San Diego on line 8. Dave, you're on the Savage Nation.
Excellent job you're doing, Jeff. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Dave.
I have this theory about the economy, what they're trying to do to it. They're spending all this money and running up all this debt, and then they're printing more money. At some point, the cost of goods are going to go up, and that means the cost of wages are going to have to go up. And if 10 years from now, everyone is making $200,000, but with only the buying power of 40, we're still paying, and now we're paying $80,000 in taxes. And I think that's what they're going to try to do to pay off this debt, is just inflate the thing out, you know, because you know it's better to pay yesterday's bills with tomorrow's money.
Dave, I want to thank you for that call. And no, you're completely right. In fact, that is their strategy. Ben Bernanke has said so, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. They are now printing about $600 billion. They've just unleashed the printing presses. And so what you're going to see happen in the United States is very similar to what happened to Weimar Germany. You just keep printing and printing and printing more money, and hence it becomes more worthless to help pay off your debts. Weimar Germany, because of World War I, had to pay off war reparations. So they just racked up the printing presses. They just kept going and printing money. That's what we're doing. And so you have to ask yourself, to me, this is the fundamental question facing this country today. You know, look, it's in my column. I don't want to keep plugging my column, but take a look at my column. What I don't understand about most people is this. The most important issue facing America today is the skyrocketing debt. Everything else, the war on terror, Afghanistan, the economy, abortion, securing the border, gay marriage, you name it, is irrelevant compared to this issue. Not because they're not important, they're very important. But the issue is this: if you become bankrupt as a country, then those issues mean nothing, because you can't do anything about them. Does it matter in Kenya or in Argentina or in Mexico what their abortion policy is, or what their border policy is, or what their economic policy is. It doesn't matter, because they can't do anything about anything because they're bankrupt. They're broke. This is the danger that we're now courting. You keep spending and spending and spending and borrowing and then printing money. You are destroying the value of your currency. You are literally impoverishing the next generation. In fact, yourself. And so what I don't understand is, how can we as Americans say to ourselves, a self-respecting nation, a great superpower, the greatest in human history, how can we follow the failed liberal socialist models of history? We are becoming the United States of Argentina. We are wiping out our middle class. So just as Argentina has literally spent itself into bankruptcy and printed money until literally those pesos are worth nothing, or whatever the currency is in Argentina. It's worth nothing. That's what's slowly happening to the greenback. So when I say this, I don't say this in jest. I'm not trying to be theatrical for you or engage in rhetorical extremism for effect. I am a student of history. Before I got into journalism and commentary, I taught history at McGill University. This may shock many of you, but in the late 19th century, from about 1880 to about the 1930s, United States, Canada, and Argentina were one of the wealthiest countries in the world. If you and I were sitting in Buenos Aires in, let's say, 1920, 1921, sipping a cappuccino, and I would say to you, you know, in 20, 30 years, we're going to become a banana republic, you would put me in an insane asylum. You say, what is this? Did they spike your cappuccino? What the hell is wrong with you? What, have you been dancing the salsa too much all night, Cooner? What the hell is wrong with you? And they followed exactly the model that Obama is now replicating here in America. Massive spending, socialized health care, control manufacturing and industry led by the state, massive trade deficits, printing money, empower the labor unions. In other words, destroy private property and business. Drive away capital. Destroy the value of your currency and empower a liberal leftist elite. They get rich, we get poor. And within 30 to 40 years, Argentina is gone. It is so gone that when I used to tell my students, I go, you know that Argentina was actually one of the wealthiest countries in the world? Do you know outside of America, many Italians came to Argentina in the 1880s, 1890s, 1900s? They didn't just come here. Off of New York, Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty. No, they also went to Argentina because it was one of the wealthiest countries in the world. People said, yeah, Argentina, America, Argentina, Canada. Those are the three places you got to go if you want to make it. This is the result of failed socialist policies. It hasn't worked in Venezuela. It hasn't worked in North Korea. It hasn't worked in Cuba. It hasn't worked in Eastern Europe. It hasn't worked in the former Soviet Union. What makes these idiots on Capitol Hill, what makes these clowns on Capitol Hill and in the White House think that somehow they're better, that somehow they can reverse the tide of history? This is the seminal arrogance of Obama. Of all of his crimes, his greatest crime is that of arrogance and pride and hubris. I'm a religious man. I am a devout Catholic and Christian. And what does the Christian faith, what does the Bible teach us? It has been the seminal, the most important lesson of Western civilization. It's what our founding fathers understood. They read the Bible religiously. They knew almost every passage. Pride cometh before the fall. What is the seminal great sin within the Bible? Who was the greatest of God's angels? It was Lucifer. It was the devil. It was Satan. He was spectacular. He was resplendent. He was the brightest. He was the most talented. He was the one that shone more than all the other angels, but that wasn't enough for him. His pride consumed him. And so he had to turn against God and against the natural moral order. And that's why he was descended into the depths of hell. This is what Shakespeare has written on. It's what many of the Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, all of the great writers, going all the way back to the ancient Greeks, the folly, the destructiveness of pride and hubris and arrogance. It is the greatest of all sins. This is what Obama has. He has the pride of arrogance. Sorry, the sin of arrogance, the sin of pride, the sin of hubris. He thinks that by his Messiah complex, that by his sheer personality, he is the one that will give us peace with the Muslim world. He will give us peace with Putin's Russia. He will give us peace with the Chinese. He will make socialism work. He will give us free health care. He will give us free housing. He will give us all these stimulus packages. That somehow deficits don't matter under him. That somehow all of this government control and regulation of the economy somehow doesn't matter under him. That he can wave a magic wand and create prosperity from thin air. He can't. And like every other power-mad, power-obsessed leader, he is not only destroying his presidency, he is destroying this very country. Pride cometh before the fall. What you are now seeing is the spectacular fall of this president. He is like a mad Roman emperor, and he is surrounded by his sycophants in that Roman court that they call the White House. And they still tell him, "You are beautifully clothed. You are not naked, Mr. President. You are beautiful and your subjects love you. In fact, your subjects now begin to revile you. They are turning against you more and more every day." And the only question now that we as Americans have to face is, are there enough patriots? As Dr. Savage said earlier on this show, are there enough patriots to stand up and say, we will not go quietly into the good night? That this greatest of all republics, there's nothing to change. This is where I completely disagreed with Obama from the get-go. It was the fundamental premise I disagreed with him. I don't want change. I love this country as it is. There's nothing to change. We have the finest constitution. We have the finest political, healthcare, and economic system the world has ever seen. Yes, it needs tinkering. Yes, it needs reform. Of course, nothing is ever perfect. But change? No. That's for Europe. That's for Indonesia. That's for Kenya. Mr. President, go anywhere else and change. But not here. Not the land of the free and not the home of the brave. Let's go to Elizabeth in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Elizabeth, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I have a couple of comments to make. One was the last time you were on this show, you gave a heart-pounding, truth-bearing, patriot-rousing speech about what it means to you to live in this country, and I thank you for that. And if I had a copy of it, I would give it to each of my 15 grandchildren. It was good.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
What I called about was, I find it ironic that these millionaire philanthropists like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, and I understand Lady Seymour came on board, that all this money they're giving to charity, guess what? Government can't tax that money, can they? Seems to me maybe they're onto something. If more of us gave money to charities and kept it local, where we could, you know, actually oversee and see what would get involved with what was going on and take it out of the hands of the government, gosh, that could really start a trend in this country.
Elizabeth, look, you make a very good point, and I really want to thank you for that call. All of these liberals that I keep seeing on television all the time, in fact, I know them, I run into them in Washington all the time. We got to pay more. We got to pay our fair share. I want 39%. No, even 40%, even 45%. My answer to them is a simple one. Why do you need the government to take your money from your paycheck? Give it. I mean, if you're so unhappy with how low you're being taxed, why don't you just give them the share of your money? Give them that extra percentage, for the extra 4, 5, 6, 7, 8%. Give millions, give billions if you want. But they don't want to do that. It's exactly what you do, Elizabeth, which is exactly what you said. They find tax shelters. They look to hide their money. That's what they all do. That, to me, is the stunning hypocrisy of this whole city. Take Hillary Clinton. Her and Bill have made millions since he became president. In fact, tens of millions. He charges $250,000 a pop every time he gives a speech. And in fact, what the mainstream media never tells you is he does it in Dubai. He does it in the United Arab Emirates. He does it in Saudi Arabia. In other words, those very countries that are financing Al-Qaeda, that are financing terrorist groups all around the world, they are paying Bill's ticket. They're punching his ticket. They're enriching his pockets. They're lining his coffers. They are basically buying our Secretary of State by buying her husband. But what do they do with their taxes? They want to raise it on all of us. How come they have every deduction in the book? How come they get every good accountant that they can get to get as many tax shelters as they want? Well, I don't understand. If you got to pay your fair share, why is it you're so desperate to save every nickel that Bill gets when he gives a speech to the Saudi sheiks? John Kerry, same thing. Nancy Pelosi, same thing. The dear leader, Barack Obama, the con man in chief, the same thing. He's making millions of dollars off all of his books. But he's got accountants, literally he's got an army of accountants telling him how to protect his money. Oh, every tax shelter imaginable they're going to find. Well, hold on now, Barack. Hold on now, dear leader. You're the one that's telling us we got to pay more. So let me get this straight. If a man dies and he puts $5 million aside for his children and an estate, you want to grab it right out of the grave. But you, when you're going around selling your books, peddling your books, no, that money that you make, that you got to put in a tax shelter. Oh, that. So when it comes to your money, you can protect it. But when it comes to our money, you can take it. My friends, that is exactly what communist apparatchiks used to do. Literally, that's what communists used to do in Eastern Europe. I know my grandfather came from there. I would visit my family in Eastern Europe behind the Iron Curtain when communism was still up. They would say, look at these communists. My family would tell me this as he would drive me around. These streets, drab construction. You would see horses pulling people on the road. And they would say, look at them. Look, we're living in poverty. They're living with dachas. They're living with Mercedes. They're driving Mercedes Benzes. They're driving fancy cars, eating at buffets at the finest restaurants. Look at the hypocrites that they are. They want equality, but not for themselves. My friends, that is exactly the same with liberals on Washington, D.C. They want your money, but they don't want to give up theirs. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I don't think there's a sense that I've been successful. I think people feel that Washington still is dysfunctional. Now, we've actually made some improvements, mainly in areas where I've got complete control, for example, how the White House operates. But I think people still feel that overall, Washington is about a lot of politics, mm-hmm. a lot of special interests,
yep.
big money,
yep.
but that ordinary people's voices too often aren't represented.
Mm-hmm. That's the dear leader giving an interview with a Colorado TV station. You're listening to The Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. You know, what I find really, frankly, hilarious about the dear leader is for some reason he keeps thinking that he's a success. And he doesn't understand why people out there in the heartland in middle America don't understand how good they've had it. Don't you understand my stimulus package saved you from disaster? Don't you see that? Don't you see how good Obamacare is? Don't you see how a government bureaucrat can tell you what's good for you and your family and what doctor you should have? Can't you see that? Can't you see amnesty is in your interest? What is it that you can't see? All the good things I'm doing for you. This is the attitude that pervades everything he does. It's this, he is consumed by this self-centered narcissism. It's always about him and he can do no wrong. And maybe in his own mind, he thinks he was born without original sin, that he's done it. Since Jesus, we've now finally found it. Here it is. He was born without original sin. We have found him, the new Messiah. I mean, this is you know, my wife always says this to me. I think he's from another planet. He just, when I look at him, the way he behaves, the way he talks, the words that come out of his mouth, everything about him, his demeanor, I say, what planet is this guy from? And the question I have for my Democratic friends, I swear I keep asking them this, where did you find this guy? You mean to tell me of all the Democrats in America, that's the best you could have come up with in 2008? I mean, this is, you want to see how bankrupt the Democratic Party is? So you're going to tell me it's Obama, Hillary, Obama, Hillary. My friends, Obama is going down and the Democratic Party is going down with him. The only question is, how far and how fast? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. May God bless you and may God bless America.
Savage.